The live stream's on, by the way, so don't say anything embarrassing.
Okay. Thank you for telling me.
Did someone say that to the filmmakers?
Boom. Apparently not.
We're coming in hot.
Yeah. Yeah. Hot take.
Hot like a volcano.
Oh, no.
Get some scorching hot lava for this.
You know, at least they, I give them credit of keeping out everything pretty much except the island stuff from the trailers. Like, we spent a lot less time on the island in this movie than I expected, but I guess that was...
to its detriment?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's at least there was only... Well, we still managed to get a stupid glass-rolling marble thing or whatever with people in it, and I'm not a fan of those things.
No. But. No, those things are death traps. Why they were like, let's hop on in one, I don't know. Especially when it doesn't have any power, and they don't have any control over it, and they're just going to roll wherever direction a stampede of dinosaurs will take them. That's beside the point. Seth... who is our returning guest, of course. Yeah. Have you, since you, we did our episode on Jurassic World back when that came out many, 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 many years ago, 150 episodes ago, as a matter of fact, would you have anything you would want to share? Because I know that you don't seem to have an entirely negative view of that movie. So maybe no. You have some bright positive things that you would like to lay down on the ground.
I don't hate Jurassic World, the original one. The first time, so I think a lot of things all count to it. One, like, for a long time, I was excited to whenever a Jurassic Park movie would come out. To me, it was something to be grateful for because, it's like Jurassic Park, as has been well spoken, is like, to me, for me, the whole reason for, not the whole reason, but a pretty pivotal, like, reason for my many career choices, better, for better or worse. And, Jurassic World came out, and it was like, on first viewing, it was the high of having another Jurassic Park movie, having it be one that, that is an operational park and what's the right word I'm looking for? It was an adequate, like, it had adequate storytelling. it had a competent structure to it that was, I thought, it had the bones, and then it had the, I mean, for lack of a better word, had the structure, like, from which to build on. Now, how it built on it fell short in many ways to me, but it had the natural, like, okay, so there's a park now, and you can't just start releasing dinosaurs, so, okay, we made a big crazy one. To me, it's like if you make a movie with dinosaurs and you have... you attach a bunch of guns to them and you're going to militarize them, you took it too far. You get like one slightly crazy thing you get to do, and you get to do it every 20 years, as far as I'm concerned. And the first one was, we made dinosaurs. So in Jurassic World, it was, well, we made a bunch of dinosaurs into a dinosaur, and we made our own. And... I'm rambling like a drunk person. I have not had anything to drink, I promise.
It is a requirement for being on the podcast, by the way.
I know. I'm sorry. So he escapes, and I'm just going to tell the story, the entire plot, Jurassic World. No, I'm not. But like, he escapes, and then we slowly start releasing other dinosaurs, and it's like it's paced. It rolls out like a satisfying. In a satisfying pace, to me the problems are all, they're just in like execution. Like, it's a bunch of little choices that all add up to being, what I didn't love about Jurassic World was like, I hate that all screen science now is Marvel science. That like, if a scientist is in a lab, they're going to have tons of holograms, like, or tons of like UI, super detailed UI that they can just reach over and spin with their hand, inexplicably and not mess up someone's work. And that it all like, and that everybody who wears a suit walks around with this like snarky, smug grin on their face, like, we're gonna make so much money off of this greed. And it's little things like that where everything just feels fake. Now, all that is being said, another guy's that, like, I was in third grade when the original Jurassic Park came out, so like, who am I to look at it and judge, like, that's real looking science? But it was much more real looking science than the science of Jurassic World. I also hate, like, I felt like 50% of my problems with the movie from a character standpoint would have been solved possibly with a, by just gender swapping the two leads. Like, I had a real problem with, like, the old, I get that they were going for a Romancing the Stone, like, vibe with Chris Pratt being the, you know, being Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard being, Bryce Dallas Howard, help me, gee golly, mister. And it was, it would have been more interesting to me if, like, it was like, you know, the Chris Pratt character was someone like, even just literally just same actors, even possibly, maybe not, but have like, that would have been something more interesting and unique by just literally just gender swapping those two character archetypes. And the big thing that I had a problem with was Jake Johnson. Sorry, I'm remembering all the problems I have with Jurassic World. I should have listed this stuff ahead of time. Keep going.
We asked you to say nice things, but I guess we should have expected this to happen.
I'm sorry. Well, no, you did, because you asked me.
All roads lead to sadness in the Jurassic World franchise.
All worlds lead to sadness in this in the tonight's podcast, 100%. That's why I think I came in ready to go. But Jake Johnson, I'll say this, and then I'll go back to some positive things. But Jake Johnson, not him. He's funny. I love Jake Johnson, but and he has several deliveries in that movie that are very funny to me. But just the way they wrote him to be this guy who has seemingly worked there for a long time, enough to have a rapport with his boss, is like suddenly today choosing to just like express his love and for the legitimacy of the old park. Like suddenly today of all days, he shows up with a park with a Jurassic Park shirt and is saying things like, sorry, that old park was legit. Like, did you just discover it existed? Like, do you know you're in a movie that's world just started today? That was perhaps one of the most just obnoxious. It was little things like that just were obnoxious that felt like slightly cynical. But so the thing is, that movie though felt like it was made with love by people who like Jurassic Park, by people who love Jurassic Park. There were a lot of fun ideas in that movie. I loved seeing the park as it was like operational. I really loved little touches. Like, I liked the like amber statues that were like there in the park and stuff. And I liked, Mr. DNA and the thing. I liked the Dilophosaurus hologram coming up, and it was just fun to see like the fully functional park then get torn down. And by the end of the movie, it's, you know, a wreck. Like, you're in one place for the whole movie and you see transformation. Okay. Whereas this movie did not do any of that all. I don't want to segue for you. It's your podcast, so I'll let you handle it.
I got a segue for you. In the original Jurassic, well, the Jurassic World, the first one there, how did you feel about the little hints of nostalgia? Like, oh, we happened to find the night vision goggles in the old visitor center and stuff. How did you feel about that kind of stuff?
It was really heavy-handed, and I would have been cool with it if it was just, if they just went through it. Like,
now, yes, I agree. Yeah. But now in this movie, it's a little more subtle. There's one in this, but when I saw it, I got really mad, and I don't know if you got mad too, but I didn't enjoy it.
Which one?
The upside-down Jeep, or SUV, or whatever, that when he first discovers Blue.
Oh, see, I saw it in the trailer.
Yeah,
that was so in the trailer? I knew, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, I paid a close attention to the first trailer, and then I stopped because I had a bad feeling.
I don't remember seeing it in the trailer, but
you just heard me talk about the things I liked about Jurassic World. I don't get super cynical. Like, I'm a guy who can find good things from Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Like, I actually,
ow,
like, yeah, I let myself like parts of that movie so that it would be redeemed. Like, I am very much, I work very hard to like movies, especially like franchises that I love. And this movie is just infuriatingly, mind-bogglingly bad in so many ways, and you could see it from a mile away. So I just wanted to like say, when I am shitting on this movie, like, that's a big deal, universe. Like, something has gone horribly wrong, because I am clearly the gatekeeper to all criticism, to all legitimate criticism.
No, that's a good thing to say. Like, it, you know, it's always important to point out, even if it's small ideas or small pieces of a film that you really liked, like, it's good to identify those and take them with you, especially if you're a filmmaker and you want to learn from your mistakes as well as other people's. But I think on the whole, we try to assess the things like, you know, success of an overall film, and I think that's usually where we end up coming off more cynical and negative than maybe we possibly could. But in this particular movie, you are correct. They
did not succeed.
They didn't really give you anything to love. They gave you a lot of stuff to be ambivalent about and to hate. Like, there's no like, oh, good, bad, and stuff. It's just like, meh, and like, you're checking your watch, and then, how dare you?
Yeah. Yes. So I want to hear what you guys' how dare yous were.
Well,
so you want to go ahead there?
You want to do this chronologically? or by order of how dare you importantness?
Whatever comes to mind, just throw them at as you got them.
Okay. I thought it was pretty unbelievable and trite the way that they used Jeff Goldblum to bookend this movie to make a giant Jeff Goldblum sandwich. I thought that was. That was awful. They had a day of filming with him.
And he said nothing. It was nonsense. Gobbledygook coming out of his mouth. It was like, and the way they cut it, it made it feel like he had been talking the entire movie. Like, it made you feel like that was like real time. You would cut back, like, that he started talking, then the whole movie happened, and the events on the island and in the mansion happened, and then meanwhile we rejoin our heroes back at the news, and Jeff Goldblum is like still talking and still giving this horrible
a congressional committee trying to figure out whether or not they should intervene, and they decided no, and then it's like, oh, we still have more Jeff Goldblum footage to roll,
and they're like, Mr. Malcolm, do you have any fan fiction literature you'd like to read and spew out of your mouth for us? And he did. God, I love Goldblum. I'm nothing against Mr. Goldblum yet.
He was unsure how the committee worked. He thought he was in Congress and he was filibustering, trying to delay a vote or something.
exactly what he was doing. It was straight up filibustering. And you know what it is? It's like, it felt like somebody writing Ian Malcolm dialogue. Like, oh, I'm going to write chaos theory. Like, I'm going to Wikipedia chaos theory. I'm going to find, like, it just felt like, it was just gobbledygook. It was like, when Malcolm would do that in the first movie, at least it felt like he was saying, like, at least we either understood what he was saying or felt like he was saying something. His whole goal in the first movie was to be a pompous, like, cynical jackass who was smarter than you and wanted you to feel like it. And in this one, it was just a guy who was Ian Malcolm and wanted you to feel like it. And it did nothing for me except make me mad.
And they wanted to seed in the dumb ideas of this movie in his dialogue, which didn't help, because you have him just randomly talking about genetic power, and then of course that's the thing that they're talking about during the second half of this movie, and it's like, well, why does he need to say that? And then of course at the end of the film you get the cherry on the freaking cake, the sundae and everything. It's just like cake and a sundae and everything all on top of each other and then set on fire, and he says Jurassic World right there in the movie.
Yeah, did you like the way he said the title?
No, and it wasn't even the title of the movie. It was the title of the other movie.
I saw it coming from a mile away. The second they showed him in the trailer, it was like, he's in one scene. And then when they saw in the second trailer, he says, welcome to Jurassic World. And the way they moved in, I was like, they're getting off, the dinosaurs are getting off the island. That's how the movie's going to end. It's going to end with him saying that line somehow. And I have never been right when I've watched a trailer and said, this is how it's going to play out.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, that very well could have been a scene they shot just for the trailer. It's that on the nose.
Well, there's also other stuff that was in the trailer, like the claws reaching across the bed with the little girl in it and stuff like that. So it's like, well, that wasn't, they didn't obviously make a little girl's bedroom on the island, so that takes place somewhere else. So they seeded a lot of this stuff in there, but to go back to something else that Seth had mentioned with editing, that is another huge sin that I have with this movie, because all of a sudden we're losing enormous chunks of time, but characters will act like no time has passed between certain scenes and then in other ones. They'll just dematerialize from a set, and we cut to different characters being in the same set just because we want to tell a slightly different series of events. Notably, when they have the breakout chaos by introducing the one headbutting dinosaur into the bidding room, and then Chris Pratt, an ex Navy SEAL who hasn't Navy SEALed in forever, takes down 5 mercenaries and flips a lever to lock the cage thing back into the middle of the room. Then we cut away and then we cut back to this room and Ted Levine wanders in and nobody's there. And Ted Levine is just like, oh, you're something we didn't see and we didn't catch. I'm going to tranquilize you and then open it up. And then I'm going to take your tooth out, because we saw one scene of him taking a tooth out earlier in the film so we could get this whole stupid tooth thing. And
wait, I know where you're going, and I want you to go there, but you gloss over the fact that he's just wandering this mansion saying, I want my bonus. Like, if you haven't collected your money yet, you did not want it that hard.
No.
Like,
they're having this ridiculous bidding thing, and like all the people are fleeing for their lives.
Characters are just wandering around this movie waiting, like, with their one dimension, and just waiting for it to apply to a situation, and then they're just trucked in. Like, that man is just wandering around. I'm sorry, you were going somewhere, and I want you to go there. Go there now.
Oh, well, I was going to say, to follow on to your point of, like, and then all of a sudden somebody is there because we have to tell something else. Once Ted Levine is dispatched, we have Toby Jones wander in, and...
Where'd he come from?
Just seemingly nowhere, because apparently he fled, because everyone fled this room, but then he didn't flee that far and came back. And then he wanders through here, sees that that's open, sees the cage is open and all that stuff going on, and he goes to the elevator, and there are all the other scared people hiding in the elevator who were silent the entire time, which makes no sense.
Isn't that where Ted Levine came from?
I think he wandered through that other backlit open door on the other side that we don't really know where it comes from.
Okay.
Or goes to.
Okay. You're right.
There is a loading dock area. The geography of this ridiculous mansion makes no sense. But there's like a loading dock area.
And there's
where
a cliff. And there's suddenly a cliff in the elevator too. That's a throwback. Sorry.
Yeah, they come in from the loading dock, but then they go right back out the loading dock onto a truck or something. So somewhere in there, there's like a large dinosaur elevator that takes them from the -3 basement level up to wherever the hell this bidding room is, which is still not in the house or something.
Yeah, and this we dispatch with Toby Jones, and we have other scenes like that where we're just cutting in on something happening, and then we cut away, and then we don't know what is happening, but then all of a sudden they'll show up, and either no time has elapsed for those people, or the people who we were expecting to see inside of a scene are just missing. You know, which is why it feels like all of a sudden there was like some scene where Chris Pratt was dragged away by something, but he wasn't. Like, that's just not in the film at all. Like, all of a sudden he's just no longer interested in keeping the Indoraptor there, because the next time we see him, he's...
Holy crap! You're right! Where was he? Like, what was he doing?
he apparently wandered back to Dallas Howard and Maisie and was trying to get them out of there with... more mercenary people.
That is some rewriting on set. That is Oh my God.
In 50 years from now, somebody's going to make one of those documentaries like they did for The Shining, where it's like, if you look at the geography of the set, these doors don't go anywhere, but it was all intentional.
No. Vulture's going to write an article in 5 years saying what the hell happened on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And it's going to be great. I was just thinking when I was setting up my gear tonight, I was like, for this podcast, I was like, this sucks because this is like the one. Well, no, we can't get it on Jurassic World either. Both Jurassic Worlds were too close to be able to have the like the development stories for them publicly available. And I was just thinking Vulture's going to write, or whoever is going to write something, you know, five or six or 7 years down the road.
It'll be something about like alternate universes and the death of James Cromwell signifying the trigger that you're now in a different universe. And then the girl is really the dead girl. And yes. It's not an actual clone or some stupid crap.
And it
like
will
that.
Be far superior to this movie. James Cromwell, by the way, oh my God, they wheel him in just to confuse some of you dummies who may not remember exactly Jurassic Park, even though we showed you John Hammond on the wall and had the character say out loud who he was. We then roll him in with the cane, so you know that these dudes, they have a code. You make dinosaurs, you carry a mosquito in the cane.
It's like when they had their ribbon cutting ceremony, they both got canes with the amber on top.
Exactly. And they both agreed, like, we will always carry this to remember the what we reaped on humanity. But then he's an old man in a wheelchair, so he must be sick. And then, of course, an aide enters the room to say, it's time to take your medicine. And he goes, oh, yes, my pills, dismissively, and then coughs on his way out. Later, he's in bed. Apparently, all he does to entertain himself is look at the same photo album over and over of his, again, this character just started existing at the beginning of this movie and only does what... the only thing he's sent to do. There's nothing else. He doesn't even watch TV or read books. He just looks at photo albums of his clone children and and coughs and takes his pills.
Yeah.
Remember that movie 20 years ago? Well, I was the silent partner that was off screen the entire time because we had a falling out because we invented this technology and John Hammond wanted to make dinosaurs and I wanted to make my dead daughter. And it's like, God,
they might as well
on.
Just named him what? Sean Schmammond and it would have been just as effective.
Sean Hammond? Is that what you just said?
I said Sean Schmammond, but I actually like Sean Hammond better. So you could edit it to where that's what I
cousin,
said.
Sean Hammond. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I just gotta say, James Cromwell is good sometimes when deployed appropriately, but
yes.
You never, ever should you deploy James Cromwell when you want an accent from the British Isles. It doesn't really work, because he even says, oh, my bloody pills, and it's like... That's like the first time
you're
you've ever said bloody in your life. Like, I don't buy that for a minute. Like, what is going on? And we have Rafe Spall in this movie, and he's British, and he's trying to have an American accent. It's just like, could you have just, like, got an old British guy and a young American person, and we could have, like, not been worrying about the words that they're using and the weird inflections that they have in their voice?
At least he didn't call anybody boyo in this movie.
Oh, God.
Okay,
LA Confidential.
So... characters. We've got some.
There
new
were
characters.
None, so we're
good. You've got anxious nerd boy, and then
he's spewing random stuff. He's an archetype that I hate in movies, and which is the the smartass computer nerd, like this just like the cynical smartass. And this is so hypocritical of me to be saying that I hate this person, but like he has a line at one point. He has a line at some point full of self-loathing. He has a line where he goes, where in the middle of like lava pouring in and dinosaurs imminent, he says something like, go to college, Dad said, you'll be able to get a job. And I remember my wife literally like turned to me and was like, what? What did he just say?
I had several of those moments in the movie where my wife looked over at me and went, what? Or come on. And most of them were in the incredibly emotionally manipulative moments where they're like making animals on screen suffer just to make us feel bad. But yeah, there were a lot of moments where you're just like, why are you doing this movie?
Yeah. To go with him being a bit of a smart butt, you have, of course, his spunky, cynical companion, Dr. Ladyfriend, who is just horribly unlikable from the first moment you're introduced to her, when she is apparently in charge of trying to get in touch with a congresswoman to set up a meeting, and is just PO'd about everything through the whole entire movie.
Well, it's a very ramshackle operation that they've thrown together in the past, like 1 week since the other... No, wait, it's been 3 years since the other island fell apart, so this is the best they can do. What did she say? Like, paleo-veterinarian or some crap? Is the one cold-calling congresswoman?
And she's never seen a dinosaur before. And I'm sorry, that park was around, like, for a long time. Like, and you apparently have loved dinosaurs your whole life, and you never went to this. Okay, maybe
wasn't
there's
there a line
some
where she said we couldn't all afford to go on vacation to the island or some crap.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Never mind. All right, they saw it coming. Some executive gave the note, and that was their answer to it. Okay,
hey, but whatever happened to Coupon Day? Like, what's his name said in the first movie?
And there's the title. Also. Also, she's so stupid. This character is so obnoxious, because I get this feeling that I would like this actress in another role. This character is just so, like, on the nose. It hit you on the head. And she's a part of the whole scene you're talking about with the nonprofit. It's just fan fiction. It felt like Jurassic Park comics that I would buy after the movie came out, and you're like, I forgive this. It's a comic. It's more of the movie I love. And
this movie is kind of just like a giant disjointed Reddit thread, isn't it?
It is. It's just fan fiction. It's like straight up, like, not even like good fan fiction. It's like the kind you'd read on like an AOL chat. Yes. It's Reddit. It's a Reddit fan fiction.
The dinosaur monster's claw slowly inched its way across the bed toward the young girl. It's like, yeah, okay, sure it does.
What kind of fan fiction are you writing? Oh, that was the movie. Yeah, you're right.
That was a $200 million movie, or whatever the hell this was.
That wasn't the 50 Shades of Grey version of...
Whoa.
Sorry. Well, we say it again and they got context, and then it gets weird.
Yeah, so anyway, the awful, unlikable, uncharismatic Dr. Ladyfriend, she is unfortunately part of this ridiculous team that Bryce Dallas Howard puts together of experts. Like, if you have this corporation...
Those two are the experts. Just those two.
It's like if you have this corporation full of money and you have all of these people who fled this island and who would have work experience there, why would you not get, like, Jake Johnson from the first movie, or Lauren Lapkus, or, like, literally anyone? You could get any of the other people who had some experience at the park, but instead they're like, no, here are some sassy teenagers. Sassy college-age kids or something. And then it's just like, we'll just throw them into it.
They all got eaten, Joe. They all got eaten in the other movie, except they didn't get eaten because everybody hid out in that whatever, that room or whatever.
Well, he knows how to plug an iPhone into a circuit breaker and open up a door, and then he can sudo to restart the AC unit.
It's almost worse that they gave, Anxiety Nerd Boy, like, some, like, well-written, sassy, kind of almost funny lines, too. Like, they gave him lines that were well-written, but they're just, like, they're so utterly false that they don't make a human.
Yeah.
We're not compatible was a funny line, but it was just not in the right movie.
Mm. Yeah, somebody stressed out about dying on a plane and or from dinosaurs isn't going to be that quippy.
I don't know. They're going to think they're that quippy. That's the problem. That person in real life is the worst. Like, just literally the worst. And so to have them in a movie, why would you think that they're going to be better? Because they're usually better in other movies. But
also, what's with this thing? They're continuing the trend with, we got the go-ahead to do a thing. We're leaving tomorrow. It's like, you can't put any more prep time into anything?
Well, the volcano's going off, you know?
Yeah, well, sure. The volcano has been ostensibly, like, getting hotter and smoking for 3 years, sort
of. Wait, and how does Pratt live so close to Cromwell? Why does that work out so well? I'm going to build my house near the... I'm named doing a Savannah accent for Chris Pratt, but I'm going to build my house over by the dinosaur mansion. That seems convenient.
In a very convenient, because it's
also he can track Blue through the forest, but he can't hear a car driving up the road behind him while he's singing at a reasonable volume.
I think he's singing for her.
You think?
Oh, I do. I think he senses her. I don't know. I don't care. I don't have any idea.
Even if he senses that somebody's coming up behind, he doesn't know it's her until she says something and he recognizes her voice. And then he does this, oh boy, and turns and looks over.
Oh, and then they do my favorite thing in movies, which is they start the next scene with, I can't believe you blank. I can't believe you thought, here's why I'm laughing, audience. I can't believe you expositional line.
Oh, and that laughter is so forced and inorganic, and it's just like,
yes,
this is like, I would buy it if the next scene is like her trying to awkwardly explain that she was fake laughing or something like that, but the fact that this was supposed to be a genuine laugh from a human being, I do not buy that for 1 minute. And it just goes back to how I feel about the first movie with these two bozos. I didn't feel like they had chemistry, because he's always trying to be too gruff and too cool for her, and she's always just disconnected from reality, I guess. Like,
she's always breathing fast and loudly and just kind of staring.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't buy them as a character.
You're right. No, I don't either. And they're characters that, like, they're characters that have had, they've had return on investment before in other movies. Like, Romancing the Stone is like the main example you go to for that. But like, the thing is, like, Indiana Jones and Marion are great. Indiana Jones and Willie, not so great. And like, to try and replicate that now is even worse, because you're just like, where is your awareness for like the overall conversation in the world and like overall sensibilities of people of like, why would you resurrect this archetype of like these two kinds of people, like, and throwing them into the mix together? It just seems absent-minded.
Yes. And it also, they try to give us that thing of like, things didn't work out between them romantically, but now they gotta get back together. But it doesn't feel like they ever really were together, and they seem like complete strangers. Every time we see them together, it's not like, oh, this is like before, and this is like this other thing. Like, you know, remember when we used to, like, nothing, there's no history with them. It's like, we left the last movie and they were kind of together-ish, yeah. And then we start the beginning of this movie and they are not together, but we get no sense of what that together time was like, or no, what
they're like, two people who are hired to be in a movie together and they're doing their jobs.
Yeah, we don't get any sense through the course of this movie why they would reconcile anything to be together again. But there they are, driving off into the sunset with their abducted child, which they should probably, like, I don't know, call the police, like, check in with Iris at least, who disappears all of a sudden in part of the film. It's just so forced, and like, all of a sudden just people are where they need to be, and they're just incredibly poorly written to just materialize and say some stuff and then disappear again, and we edit, cut, smash, whatever to the next thing, and then they do it all over again.
This movie has one of my favorite action/blockbuster movie tropes, and when I say favorite, I mean I absolutely detest it, is that every, I don't know, what, like 4 minutes, we're looking at two characters, and then we cut to a camera angle that is 90 degree perpendicular to them, and they slowly turn their heads towards the camera as a door opens or something reveals or whatever the hell happens, and it's just like, oh, cool, we're doing another slow motion turn our head shot to something that's supposed to be important or scary. It's like, okay. Again and again and again and again.
Oh, like the slow tremble turning? Like, is it like a...
Yeah, it's like, you know...
It's like a cowboy, or is it like a medium, like, or like, yeah, a, yeah, close-up?
No, it's more like a cowboy, yeah, for sure. Like, if there's something foreground that they're turning towards or whatever.
Could you describe for the audience what a cowboy is, other than the obvious?
Wikipedia real quick. Cowboy.
And then you've got the reverse of that shot called the reverse... No, don't Google that.
It is... It's So a cowboy is an animal herder who tends cattle on ranches in North America, traditionally on horseback.
Settles his debts with gunfights.
Webster's Dictionary defines marriage as the fusing of two metals with a hot torch.
I had a mouthful of water. it almost came out of my nose.
A cowboy is essentially a medium... like a medium wide shot that's essentially like thighs up, hips up. Mm-hmm. And it's traditionally in I'm actually telling you, Joe, as if you don't know, but well, I know you're just voicing
I'm just,
the audience.
I just be the voice of the audience. They're not like, there were cowboys in this movie.
Uh-huh, there uh-huh. should have been. At this point, if you're gonna do a movie this bad, just put cowboys in it. We're used to that.
Everyone dies. Cowboys versus dinosaurs. It worked well for Cowboys versus Aliens.
Oh god.
Look, it would have worked just as well as this did without the cowboys.
You hear that, you hear off screen the clinging of the spurs, somebody steps into frame, you hear that music or whatever, and then somebody draws a pistol and fires at the raptor.
It's and it's blue, like with a cowboy hat, inexplicably.
God.
Speaking of blue,
I was gonna make fun of one more camera angle. There were a lot of really, really, really close close-ups in the first act of this movie that made me really uncomfortable, and I don't know how you guys felt about that.
I think
it didn't bother any of you guys, did it?
I don't remember.
No, I think the only thing that really stuck out was when they were doing their awkward let's grab a beer thing at the local tin roof bar, where it just they were in real tight on them, and it was seemed like it was mainly to show off the glints on the ceiling, because I got nothing out of being that close to Chris Pratt's face. But
there's also a shot in that scene where the cameraman reframes and they used it. They're like, oh, we went from a close-up to a medium and it was nice and smooth, so we might as well just keep it in the shot.
I didn't notice.
I did.
I think I noticed. I think, okay, so I remember noticing something in that scene, and you may have just helped me remember what it is.
It's just the camera moves very arbitrarily to a different, like a different framing that you would use in like a shot reverse shot for a scene like this. And it's just like, that wasn't motivated. Why did that happen?
Yeah.
Like, oh, the camera guy just reframed because they were still rolling and they just wanted a different angle. Anyway, blue, you say?
Yes, blue. They blue. Blew it.
Is the smartest boy on the whole planet.
Hey, look, I liked this part of the first movie, the Jurassic World. Like, I actually was on board with the training of raptors. I thought that was right on the line of like, I'll buy it. If you go any further with it, I won't. But I'll buy it right now, and it's actually fun for me to buy. And
so you didn't enjoy Mark Watney, raptor trainer, recording his video sessions?
What the hell was like? Everything in this movie with Blue was ridiculous. Like, Blue shows up, and we have a little moment of, hey, you know me, I found you. Like, that was real easy to find that dinosaur. Why in the world? Like, and if you were just going to shoot it, why did you need him? Like, because it wasn't even her idea to get Chris Pratt. I'm sorry, I'm now realizing this as I speak. It wasn't her idea, it was the dude with the Marvel desk, the showing off all these just completely unnecessary dossiers of all the dinosaurs and being like, we need Chris Pratt's dossier and we need his face and him here in the movie now. And then she goes and gets him, and then he goes there and they find the tracker, which scientist boy does, and they find him, or tech boy does, they find him. Blue, and they go get Blue, and Chris Pratt attempts to do his Chris Pratt thing, and then they shoot Blue. Like, they literally didn't need him at all.
I think they needed him to distract Blue because they couldn't get close enough without him. Because, like Chris Pratt said in the movie, like, you know, you can't get close to her in those trucks. You can't get... You know, she'll run away if she senses any sort of danger, blah, 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 blah. Excuses, excuses, excuses. I mean, it was just to have them reunite on screen. And they do reunite.
They were using him as blue bait or something.
Oh, God. anyway, they have them reunite. And Blue, they do the whole thing. And I didn't like this about the first film. I know that For you, Seth, it worked. But for me, it was eye-rolling every time that
You're not the only one. You're not the only one. Don't worry.
Yeah, every time it was just like, blue, blue. And then he's standing there holding his hand out, slowly circling the set, clicking the thing. Just blue, blue. It's like, calm down. You're not... This is just... It's just so over the top, and it's weird.
You like the part where he threw the beef jerky and it bounced off Blue's face? And you were like, I don't know if Blue recognizes him.
That was kind of cheap and dumb. And because obviously Blue does recognize him, or Blue would have like eaten, would have ate his face. But this is also a movie where they still try to, I don't know, treat carnivorous dinosaurs as serious threats, but also like trainable and, mainly only killing bad people, which is...
They're very smart dinosaurs, Joe. They're very, very smart.
Yeah, oh, no, they don't even kill them. They just, like, they wrestle with them. They don't even, like... Did I talk about this last week? They don't even, like, rip them apart or attack them. They just, like, jump on them and wrestle, like, with them. They just throw them around, and they and they sit on them and stand on them, and they push them around a little bit, and that's it. Like,
yeah, and so when Blue attacks the trigger-happy guy... and gets mauled, and there's blood on the camera lens. Thank you. We needed that.
God.
I don't generally care for that. It's cheap. But anyway, so we have fake blood.
I've done it though, so I can't say anything about it.
I enjoy a good schmutz on the lens if it's used properly.
I don't think this is used properly because we don't care about
this. I
did it
in Plot Device when we blew up the alien in Plot Device. We put Blue across it, and Blue.
When you
relevant.
Did that thing that they stole from you in Avengers.
Yes, when I did the thing from Avengers. When I wrote the Avengers. Mm-hmm. Continue.
Well, no, but they maul this guy and they shoot Blue, and then they finish taking down Blue, and they trank Chris Pratt, and then they seemingly don't care about the guy who may or may not be alive, but they're very concerned about saving the raptor.
Oh, they don't at all address him. He's just laying there dying.
Yeah, so, but
well, he must have gotten away, because we didn't see the lava consume his body. We saw it consume some other bones
right.
and other crap.
Yeah. We get the weird Stegosaurus-looking scene. I don't know why all the dinosaurs...
That wasn't a Stegosaurus. Wasn't a Stegosaurus.
Okay, sorry. The weird...
I don't remember what it was. If
it was
I were 12, I would know what it was.
Thing that wasn't exactly
it
a Triceratops.
It was more like an ankylosaur, wasn't it?
I don't know. It was like a Triceratops, but it had like a big beak, but tiny little horn things, I think. I don't know. But
I'm not going to look it up.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It is much like... how the Lost World managed to find dinosaurs that weren't originally on the island. This movie does the same.
Lost World can do that because it's a different island, bud. It's the research island. Don't get me started on that. Continue. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you and then saying continue like a real asshole. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Your Honor.
It's continually interrupting.
I'll allow it.
Bright Fest is just—it's more satisfying than the movie, so it's fun.
Wait a minute, though. I do want to back up, Joe, because I did want to ask you specifically something. Both of you, but Joe, just because I know you're heavier on the VFX side than Dan. What was up with Chris Pratt's face in the trailer in that scene? He is holding his hand out, talking to Blue, and he's like, "You know me," and. I remember seeing that in the trailer and thinking they have painted out some ghastly wound that they give his character early on. Like maybe this is where I was wrong in my assumptions, but maybe it takes him a while to get Blue's loyalty around. Like maybe Blue like messes him up like in the process and like cuts up his face and stuff with a knife and like and like gets him, you know, like maybe we earn it, like, and maybe Chris Pratt has some huge face scar, maybe they got ballsy with this, and no, his face is normal in the movie. Why did it look so messed up in the trailer?
I have no idea. It's been months since I've seen the trailer, so I could not tell you right now off the top of my head, but it's possible. There's a lot of spotty weird things in here, so maybe it had something to do with that. Who
go back and look at it, because
also working
it
on
is
another
weird.
Movie, had to like get a mustache photoshopped out, did he?
No, a mustache on the side of his head. But
on the side of his head. Sorry.
Yeah. No, he has that. Okay, I'm going to be honest. I also don't care for Chris Pratt's current mustache either. It's a little weird. But they do that whole thing, and then he's tranked, and then he wakes up with the whatever it is licking his face, and there's flies, and it's supposed to be a gross out moment, and then it stomps near him but not on him, and then meanders off because there's lava coming down, and then in 2 seconds he's surrounded by lava, which seemingly came out of nowhere because a dinosaur literally walked in from that side of the set, quote unquote, prior to this. I don't understand what.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not a volcanologist or whatever, but like they got new plumes of lava popping out of every plot motivated side of the stupid mountain whenever the hell they feel like it.
Yeah.
There is an excellent tweet from an actual volcanologist I don't remember her name or the tweet, and I want to find it. She basically, it's this whole like thread where she's like, he's like, hey, next time reach out. I could have, like, I love cool volcanoes in movies, and I could have totally helped you make one that was real, that was in any way utterly realistic whatsoever.
Do you think this movie wasn't concerned about realism?
Oh, it just makes me, you know what
every
movie was?
60 seconds, look over your shoulder, catastrophic explosion coming right towards
us. Do you guys want to know a movie that was concerned with realism? It's a little movie called Jurassic Park, and... It brings us back to what I call the Marvelization of this franchise that drives me batshit crazy.
Is this the one where Blue has some sort of like particle system that creates a metal suit around him to protect him from the lava?
Oh my god, that's next. You know, next is like they're gonna finally do the militarized dinosaur thing, which. If you guys haven't read that script, it's amazingly bad.
you talking about the old script from like Lost World days?
The one from post Jurassic Park 3 days. That's the militarized dinosaurs one that was for 4. It was supposed to be Jurassic Park 4.
Oh, right. No, I have not read that.
I'll send it to you. But like they're going to do that now, but it's going to be like, you know, vibranium level nanotechnology.
Can I read a quote from the internet to you guys real quick?
Yes.
Where was this? It was something about Spielberg talking to Trevorrow about how he wanted to make a series of films, so they were trying to make something that seemed more like a serialized storyline that could go from film to film or something. Mm-hmm. Spielberg told Trevorrow he was interested in having several more films, sequels to discuss, something that was a bit less arbitrary and episodic, and something that could potentially arc into a series that would feel like a complete story. So I don't know. Apparently that's what they're using to motivate their justification of this air quotes storyline that happened in this movie. But God, that worries me about where the hell this is going.
I mean... The only way to go is down at this point, because while I didn't love Jurassic World, I thought you could do something with where it left off, and with
really, pitch what you could do, because I'm convinced. Like I said in the last one, you can make a good Jurassic Park, a decent Jurassic Park movie every 20 years. Once enough people have forgotten the last one, you can just reboot the park and do it all over again. And that's like really the only good concept you can do with these. Besides, you made a park with dinosaurs and the dinosaurs breakout movie, and then you get what we haven't gotten yet, which maybe we'll get next, but probably not. You get the dinosaurs are loose in the real world and some kind of unique original treatment of that. But what would you do, Joe, after Jurassic World?
I would have
continue.
defend your position. I would have had a competing park, much in the same way that we have, Disney World and Universal Studios.
Like a PC to its Mac, you would say?
No, not like that.
You can't put it back in the box. Isn't that what he says? You can't put it back in the box, genetic technology. And then he mimes, like, putting something into a box in his hand or something.
Yeah, and but you can't put the genie back in the bottle. It's supposed to be a bottle. Where does he get this box from?
Maybe genie is not something that resonates with modern audiences.
No, but just who wrote this? Just a bit anyway.
What is a genie? I was born in 84. What's a genie?
Oh my god!
Maybe if this movie came out after the reboot of Aladdin, people would understand. But it's before.
Mm.
I remember Aladdin. I'm not continuing this character.
Well, anyway, what I would have done maybe would be to pursue something else that was not directly connected to this particular park, but was exploring the technology and the wow nature of it, and how it was threatened by the failure of this other park, and how they needed to be concerned with preserving their competing park so that it also didn't meet the same fate. And then you didn't need to have it end in disaster, and it could have just been a story about how sometimes we want to see dinosaurs and for things not to go horribly awry, because sometimes things can be fine. It doesn't always have to end in disaster.
Wait, so your pitch is like the Biosyn Park, which, do you guys get that reference?
Yeah, yeah. That was supposed to be from the Lost World novel. That was the competitor to Ingen.
It was from the Jurassic Park novel and the Lost World novel. Okay. Yeah, that was who Dotson worked for. Mm-hmm. And wait, Dotson was in the Lost World, wasn't he? I forgot about that.
He was?
In the book.
Oh.
Yes.
Sorry,
it's been a very long time since I read the book.
Fun fact, I believe that actor did not end up being a good person.
Yeah,
who played Dotson.
We discussed that when we did our last
You did. I'm sorry. That's how I learned it. Sorry. That's,
no, it's just, it's not the kind of thing that I like to revisit. So we'll move briskly along.
moving along to whatever we're talking about. Oh, yes. Okay. So it's a Biosyn type park, and then it is, but then it works out because they're like, who cares? Well, and the movie is conflictless?
The conflict is from people trying to shut it down because the other one was a failure, so this one must be an abomination as well. And it's about
them trying
to...
Are the dinosaurs defending themselves in court?
No, not that. This isn't the B-movie. But,
we have rights, too. We're animals that are on the verge of
extinction. According to this movie, clearly they have rights. Because she's alive, they should be, too.
Oh, God, I hated that so much.
Although, remember in the first Jurassic World movie where they said that they're InGen property, so they're not really, like, they're things, they're not animals or whatever.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk about how the United States has jurisdiction over an island off of Costa Rica, but...
I would like to talk about some of those things, because that leads us to the cold open of this movie, where apparently this island where this disaster happened that has a bunch of dinosaurs roaming around it, again, has no sort of government oversight trying to, like... prevent people from getting there, or like just go drop a bunch of concrete barricades around the whole thing just from
restricted.
There was not even a restricted title at the beginning of this in large red text.
How dare they assume we just know it? Yeah,
it's
I know.
A bunch of jackasses in like a Steve Zissou mini sub, like cruising through and opening the garage door, and then suddenly the Mosasaurus is out. It's like, what the hell is happening here?
And people were like rabid Jurassic Park fans. Loved this opening. They were raving about this opening. It was like the best opening of any Jurassic Park movie in years, which there hasn't been that many in years.
This is a real thing that you're saying?
The real thing. So I have friends. So the Jurassic Park like fan community is a very interesting one.
What are they called? Parkies?
They've God. That's too good and bad. They've claimed the entire month of June as their own, Jurassic June, which is actually... look, I don't want to make fun of them. I'm not making fun of them, because actually like a couple of them are friends, and they're really good. Their love for the franchise is totally authentic and real, and they are... And they're just really, really sweet people. And so I want to make sure that it's known that I'm not at all making fun of this community. But
is Jurassic June a real thing, or did you make
yes,
that up?
Because no.
we have dumb themes
look up,
for our
no,
show.
Look up, no, look up, no. I love Jurassic Park. Like, that's clearly closer to my heart because it's way stupider.
thank you. We try.
You're
welcome. Very dumb.
Thank you.
Star Wars
we try.
Fans have kind of claimed the month of May as their own, even though.
I mean,
I think
what? At least they're not claiming entire years at this point because that's what we're working toward. Because the entitlement. There's an entitlement to the Star Wars fandom kingdom, which, by the way, is just people now. It's not an actual, like, sub-community. But Jurassic Park fans, they're still like a niche subculture of people. Like, everybody loves Jurassic Park, but, like, the people who, like, collect stuff Jurassic Park-wise, it's still a very small community of people. And so one of these guys... I don't know. Yeah, he goes... I'm actually not going to say his name. He goes because he goes by several, like, under the Jurassic June Twitter. I guess he's public about who he is. I just want to make sure I don't, like, reveal his identity for some reason. He's keeping private, but we'll call him Nate because that's his name. So Nate.
We'll call him Brian Johnnelly.
Yeah,
welcome to Toxic Park.
We'll call him Brian Johnnelly. I prefer that better. We'll call him Brian Johnnelly. And Brian would, first off, he started this thing with all these other Jurassic Park fan guys, like on Twitter and stuff, called Jurassic June, where they would just tweet Jurassic Park stuff during June. And they got, like, people from Stan Winston School involved with it too. And it caught on as this big thing. So my buddy Nate makes these, Brian Johnnelly makes these t-shirts and stuff for Jurassic June. And, like, so this is, like, they started this the year Jurassic World came out leading up to it. And when they, he flew out to LA to hang out at the premiere, outside the premiere, and somebody tweeted at Trevorrow saying that Nate was there. And Trevorrow came out, found him, and brought him in, gave him tickets, got him into the premiere, which was really, really cool. So this guy's like a massive. These guys are massive fans. These guys, like, collect toys. They actually, like, collect Jurassic Park toys for people looking for Jurassic Park toys. Like, they, like, deal Jurassic Park toys.
I saw a Jurassic Park t-shirt at Hot Topic that I was walking by at the mall the other day, and was like, ooh, I kind of want one of the black shirts with the original look. I'm the Jake Johnson. I'm coveting the original t-shirts.
You're not alone.
You also saw the Ford Explorer.
Yeah, that was tonight. Some fan painted their Ford Explorer to look like a Jurassic Park
vehicle.
That seems
very convenient, Dan, that it was there in the parking lot the night you did the podcast, the day you bought it.
The day I finished putting the paint job on my own Ford Explorer.
I finished shrink wrapping it. I forgot where I was going with Jurassic June stuff.
It was about the beginning of the movie, how Jurassic Park fans were.
Yeah, so these guys, like, were raving about this opening before I saw it. And I was like, okay, at least the opening's going to be rad. And then it came out, and I was like, this is fan fiction. This is just plain, like, it felt kind of cool for a bit to see, like, the nostalgic feeling of, like, oh, we're on an island with some rundown gear and people with yellow ponchos and.
There was
a dinosaur.
Some cool stuff with that first shot when the lightning goes off and you see that the Mosasaurus is above him, like, that was cool, but then it kept
going.
That was cool. And you're like, the guy
did it, like, three more times.
I can't hear you through his microphone while everyone in the helicopter is waving at him to run. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and the T-Rex is coming up. It's like, yeah. And again,
and
it was one of those things where...
the ladder and they're wrestling with the helicopter and, oh no, cut the rope or whatever, but it breaks just in the nick of time. But, oh, by the way, the Mosasaur...
By the way, that moment you saw in the trailer where the Mosasaur eats a dude hanging on a ladder, it happens.
That was in the trailer too?
Yeah, it was. And I'm just like, you know, I don't know. I just miss when, like, you wouldn't see a dinosaur at the beginning and when it attacked you, it didn't just, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, also, I think that this sub thing was a little weird because it was also like a, you know, kind of a cartoon sub where you have just a giant glass bubble and the lights slowly turn on one at a time through the opening. And we
it's got a claw hand and a buzzsaw hand, like, you know, it's conveniently designed.
Yeah. And you get the dry for wet stuff and all the CG dust floating around everywhere. And you have the bones very conveniently laid out in a place where they can just carve it off. As if it...
How did they know the bones were down there?
Well, because the Mosasaurus ate it, so I guess it had to go somewhere. But how it's deposited as like
bone
a
scopes
whole skeleton?
You don't know about bone scopes, Dan? They're just like, it's just like bone radar.
And, it's like it's bone sonar because it's underwater.
It's
right?
Bone trasound or yeah, bone bonar. It's bonar. And,
oh, we got there. That was good.
But, you know, I think the reason the opening felt cool, and I'm going to take all of the credit away from the movie, is because of rain, night, and lightning. Because the lightning flashes revealing the T-Rex and the Mosasaurus were cool.
You're right.
Nothing else about it was cool.
No.
That is why they freaked out, and they don't know it. It is. You're right. It's what we talked about last week. It's like dinosaurs at night in the rain are always cool, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
They are... Yeah, man.
At least they finally realized that in this movie, and they used it briefly, and then that was the end
of
the cool part.
There was rain at the end with the stupid Indochino walking around.
Okay, so question for you guys. Did this movie do anything that you didn't see coming? Because one of the moves in this movie that I saw coming from the second they started setting it up was when they started climbing on that ledge when Blue was wrestling with the Indoraptor. I'm like, oh, that raptor's coming through that window right when they're going to be crossing it. And it's like, yep, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No.
Well, here's the thing. I think you knew that, and what they walked this boring middle ground to where, like, because they walk by the first window and it doesn't happen, and so I think they knew that you knew it was going to happen. That's why they didn't make it happen on the first window.
Well, I knew it was coming out of the other one because the other one was a very nice stained glass window and it was right by the girl, not by Chris Pratt. Well, but
right. See, like, if it was Spielberg, like. You want to do it the Spielberg way, you make it clear that that thing's going to come through the window, and you make us scared and terrified to pass by that window, and you milk that thing for like a good like minute and a half of like, we're going to slowly or quickly pass these windows as fast as we can. Like, I don't know. I may be wrong.
That window was also obvious because there was like a roof stuff for them to go onto on that side, whereas the other one would have like deposited them in the driveway. They needed to wrestle around on the roof. What I thought was incredibly stupid was when she and Chris Pratt are on the roof trying to get away from this situation, they climb over the conservatory.
Wasn't the situation a person in a reality show at some point?
Yeah.
Jersey Shore. Yeah,
Jersey Mike's. That's right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, but they can't get to
get it Mike's way with the oil and vinegar.
But she lives there and she's climbed on this roof literally in several scenes before this. Like, she knows the layout. She knows that there's no escape if they climb over that thing. But they go that way anyways. And then it's like, oh no, we're trapped. Surprise! And it's like you couldn't see there weren't any windows there. I know it's dark, but. It's not that dark where you can't see windows with lights in them, where you can see windows with lights in them in the other direction. But they, for
also,
some reason,
she
trap
hides.
Themselves.
She doesn't hide under the sheets. She puts the sheet up to her nose and then keeps it there. Like, get all the way under the sheet, girl. Like, you're not getting anything from being able to see it.
What happened to hiding under the bed? Yeah. When did kids stop doing that?
Because they wanted to have this
What's
image.
With kids these days?
These millennials, they don't even know how to hide under a bed. Was that her bedroom, by the way, or was she trying to hide in Grandpa's bedroom because she
no,
was like
No, that's
extra
her bedroom
sad.
Because there's a bunch of toys on the floor.
Yeah, the light feature thing and the...
When the Indochino raptor comes in and starts messing around.
Yeah, they knew that they wanted to have the image of this girl in bed with the sheets on her face in profile with the claw thing reaching across slowly, and that's in the trailer, and they wanted to have that as an icon of this.
That's okay. In a better movie, that would have been cool.
But there's no logical connection to get to these places because she literally runs out of the conservatory up to her bedroom screaming down halls, and the raptor chases her Because somehow chasing her through this winding thing is like the easiest target for the raptor to get. By going on the roof and...
Oh, and he will barrel through like wooden staircases, like just tear them apart, but he cannot get into a laundry chute, like at all. He is not able to penetrate the laundry chute, but he will take the entire staircase down on his way there.
Yeah, well, it's a dumb waiter, but your point is taken because it's dumb. But yeah, it's like, oh no, I can't scratch at it with my claws that can pierce flesh. I can only just slightly nuzzle it. But that's one of the flaws of the later Jurassic Park films, is that the horrible, dangerous thing is only lethal to non-main cast characters, and that there's always some minor hesitance or restraint that causes them to pull back slightly when they get near a main character. And you see some of that in here with when they're going around the skull thing in the conservatory, and the raptor climbs up on top, the Indoraptor climbs up on top and is looking around, and they're like, no, run. And so they run, and then the Indoraptor is like, oh, I'm going to pratfall now, and just lands on the floor and like takes its time getting up and like trying to go up the stairwell. And it's like, the reason why it can't maneuver is because you need these main cast members to get up there. But we've seen this thing like dispatch people so quickly prior to this that it doesn't make any plausible sense why it's bumbling now, other than we just need it to not kill the cast, so it's not threatening.
Also, do you remember when these movies used to be about just not dying, like just don't die, just run away from the dinosaurs and don't die, and that was the goal? Now the goal is like pause this auction, leave it in its cage, release the other dinosaurs, don't do it though, but do it, save this girl, maybe run this way. Like there's so many different goals that we don't care. We like, oh, these people aren't gonna die because they need to pull a lever and and not save the dinosaurs, or maybe?
Yeah. Like, also, remember in the first movie where a big conflict was that they couldn't get help because they couldn't get the phones back online? They're inside this mansion for hours. Hours and hours. No one has called anyone this entire time? There isn't even a scene of somebody picking it up and being like, oh no, the line's dead because of the storm. Like, none of that happens in this. It's just like, we can't have outside interference, so we just need to have all of our characters bumble their way through this
the entire time.
Well,
what would they do, really? Like, would the cops just show up and be like, dinosaurs, stop. It's against the law what you're doing.
I'm given to believe that officers are generally armed, and if it was a situation maybe where there were dinosaurs on the loose in a world where there are dinosaurs, that maybe they would take the call seriously and perhaps dispatch the National Guard or something. Like
the little girl needs to pick up the phone and say, send more teeth, and then the police would know that that's code for dinosaur on the loose.
Yeah, the river. But
the river! I forgot about the code. The river.
Yeah, because they don't feel particularly isolated except for the fact that they're inside this mansion. And there's all these cars surrounding this mansion, and all these rich people have left, but there's still cars left. And you get the scene of what's his face, Mile, whatever, something, Mills, leaving so slowly. It took him like what, 70 years to load that rib tube into his Land Rover. With his two assistants, and he gets stampeded. Like, the entire time the rest of this act is going on, like, probably at least an hour has been going on, he has been walking to this SUV and getting a cut-off piece of the Indominus Rex rib delivered to him, and then standing at the doorway to his car when a stampede comes. Like, that is what he's been doing.
And I never thought that we would ever get a moment where we would miss, to where like I would miss the satisfaction, in quotes I say it, of Peter Ludlow dying in The Lost World via baby T-Rex. Like, that was a dumb scene. And this, like, a dumb scene of seeing a greedy person get killed by a dinosaur. And this made that look like this made Jurassic Park 2 look like Jurassic Park 1.
Yeah.
Like, it was unreal.
Yeah, because it was one of those things, too, where they try to have a fake out of the Carnotaur or whatever, that's hovering around in the background, because they like to do a wide shot of a dinosaur way off in the distance whenever they have some threat they want to imply. Like, they did that, too, when the whatever it was going down the tube with little sparks of lava illuminating it briefly. So they do this thing with the Carnotaur, hanging out and turning its head towards evil jerk guy, and he's standing there in the foreground, and then all of a sudden, T-Rex, ta-da! And it's one of those things that where we've seen so many people dispatched by T-Rexes at this point, seemingly out of nowhere in this franchise, that it has lost any effect at all.
100%.
Totally. I just like rolled my eyes because when I saw the Carnotaur, I was like, he's not going to get killed by this Carnotaur. He's going to get killed by the T-Rex, because that's the kind of movie that this is. This is the rote, recycled garbage leavings of the Jurassic Park franchise. Is evil bad guy must die by T-Rex. That is what's going to happen. And then sure enough.
And then T-Rex must roar and we get the Jurassic Park theme, as if that means anything anymore at all.
No.
And it happens twice in this movie. Now, I had to see this movie twice because I have a son who, thank God, wanted to see a Jurassic Park movie when it came out. So I had to see it first and make sure that it wasn't too dino violent, and then took him to see it reluctantly and did not project any of my thoughts and feelings on it, because I'm trying to be that kind of dad who lets him think things for himself. And God bless him, he came out going, "What was that?" Which I never did at his age. Every movie was a blessing to me at his age. So I worry for him, to be quite honest. He's outsmarted the films, or the films have just gotten incredibly stupider. But the point of my rambling was that on second viewing, I noticed they tried to counter your inevitable feeling of, didn't we already see the T-Rex victoriously roar? Like, didn't we already see that once in this movie? By making it the Jurassic World theme midway through and then the Jurassic Park theme at the end, which is kind of more infuriating. It's like, you knew it. You knew that you did this twice. Why did you do this twice? Like,
and a third time, really, sort of, if you count the lion in the zoo that roars.
Oh,
up.
Yeah.
Why
you guys get what I'm saying about, you know what? I'm fine with that. By that point, I'm like, whatever. Just show me whatever you want.
Yeah, T-Rex, he bites and he roars. Like, that's his thing. That's his M.O.
Chomps in it. Yeah, yeah.
Chomps and roars. Can we talk a little bit about Mr. Black Market Auctioneer and that really, like, incredibly awkward, like, Darren Aronofsky kind of auction scene that they had there?
It was so weird.
It was
so
incredibly
weird.
Strange. It felt like something out of, like, a Paul Verhoeven film. Where...
Yes.
You know what if... Sorry, go ahead. I have very unpleasant thoughts about that scene.
Yeah, it's sort of a cartoonish send-up of what villainy was perceived to be in the 80s.
Yes.
Because there is no representation from, I would say, more modern concerns, or even us holding a mirror up to ourselves by having any sort of American representation there and being like, look, we're also evil and bad. Instead, we're the arms dealers for all of these other countries, and one of them is a Russian guy, and one of them is, you know, some other former Soviet Union country, and it doesn't feel like it's modern or saying anything modern about the world that we live in terms of weapons or those concerns, even though it's supposed to be all about turning science into a weapon in a world that we live in. It's garbage, complete garbage.
Yeah, it was also kind of a little bit of like a, it was like a fashion show thing that they got going on there with a runway. Like, did BD Wong actually get eaten, or did he manage to sneak out in some of the random people leaving and coming back?
He got knocked out. He got knocked out by the girl or by the guy, and he was laying, and then he disappeared. He was laying on the ground and then disappeared when Blue showed up and started ragdolling, wrestling with all those guys.
Well, they had one of the mercenaries drag him off screen.
Oh.
Yeah, while the other mercenary was dealing with them, and they released Blue. But they're in the montage of weapons propagating through the world, you see him looking at vials of Dino DNA that he has inside of a suitcase he opens. So
that was him.
Yeah, he has survived. Because by this point, you haven't had enough BD Wong in this franchise, I guess.
Look,
Dr. Henry,
you know
Henry
what?
Wu needs to live to see another day.
Listen, they haven't given him anything to do. So, you know, like, good for him for getting another chance, at least one more chance at it, to do something. That's a big stretch. There was a Doritos commercial with this last round that was with BD Wong in it, and it was like they sent these like giant Dorito like eggs to people as a part of the campaign. But anyway, a producer in Nashville, I think, pitched on that and had me up to direct it, and it wasn't titled Jurassic World thing, but I was like, I think it's a Jurassic World thing and I really want this. And then I didn't get it. But fun fact about me.
Sorry,
I don't remember the point of that. I'm sorry.
they keep crapping all over you with bad movies and then not letting you make commercials for their bad
movies. And they won't even let me make their Doritos commercials. Yeah. It's all about me.
So is that really just the source of your resentment for this movie? Would you have been fine with it otherwise? It's just because you didn't get to direct
it. It was a masterpiece. I am sick of pretending and doing this show for you. It was gorgeous cinema. It was trash. It was garbage. It was a hot circle of garbage is what it was.
Did you know that Iris was played by Geraldine Chaplin, the fourth child of Charlie Chaplin?
What?
Yes.
Who was Iris?
That was the housekeeper.
The old lady. Yeah.
Nanny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
And the...
I don't know what to do with that.
First of eight with the fourth wife, Una O'Neill. So, he had a lot of kids, apparently.
Wow.
A lot of kids. But, that's kind of sad that her contribution to this was, we got a chaplain that we have cast and they get to be a concerned nanny and then disappear, never to be seen from or worried about or heard from again. So sorry,
yeah,
Geraldine.
She didn't even get to fall down or anything or do any chaplain type stuff.
I honestly,
that's probably for the better that they didn't exploit her in that way.
Yeah. I mean, this movie isn't called Pratfallen Kingdom because he's already starring in it. But okay.
She could have done one of those like Willy Wonka, like where they fall and then like do a somersault and then stand back up, surprise everybody things.
Well, while we're talking about things where we weren't surprised.
Or she could do gymnastics like on the bars. She could just like jump on the bars and flip around.
No, that was Jurassic Park 3, so that'll be in the next installment, the Jurassic World 3. Somebody will do some sort of...
Wrong. It was in the Lost World, so they missed their chance.
Uh-huh. Oh, God, you're right. It was Lost World.
It was Vanessa Lee Chester. Yeah.
I'm glad I was here. Thank you for the correction.
Yeah, but it's talking about things where we could see something coming and we thought that it would happen and then it happened. One thing I thought would be coming was that Iris would show up to play some sort of a role in the end of the film, and then she didn't at all. Like, I kept waiting for her to like show up and like knock a dinosaur with a door or something like that, or sacrifice herself so that they could escape, or
and then make some
the
sort
cavalry.
Of quip about like having manners or something, and then like get the girl and get
oh,
out.
Oh, really?
Of there.
Yeah. Like
I thought something would happen the whole time. I thought she was. She is in. So they're making four different movies at once, and she's in this movie, this Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom movie. But the other ones, she's compartmentalized here. She has no reason to dip out and come into the other ones whatsoever. Like, she's been there, she said her lines, she's been like, but the girl, she's the c word, you know, clo, I won't say the whole word, I'll let the audience think of it. She's a clo, and that's what her job is.
Was anyone surprised by the clone reveal?
Not at all. I was surprised that it didn't meet. I thought, if you're going to clone her, give her some dino DNA. I thought it was going to be revealed that she was like part dinosaur or something.
I think that was one of the treatments that had been written, was that somebody was experimenting with fusing human and dino DNA.
Alien 4.
Yeah. Oh. Remember, she didn't want
to... It could just be like Trojan horse in there. Like, it didn't even have to be like, you know, it could be like a dormant... That's how genetics work. Like a dormant, like they, it's like hidden, you know, in her lungs or something. I don't know how genes work. I don't know. I just thought, even my own son was like, what was the point of her being a clone? It didn't even do anything. They didn't even like go anywhere with it. Like, what was the point? And I was like, son, you're too young to be asking these questions. Just enjoy the bad film.
Yeah. There's no reason for her to be in this movie, is there? Aside from setting it up for the next movie?
Well, aside from setting it up so that she's a clone, so that she identifies with the clone, so then she's the one who innocently pushes the button releasing T-Rex to kill people in the countryside.
If they had, like, committed to that for the whole movie, if that was their theme of the movie, and which I guess it kind of was in hindsight, but it did not feel like it.
What was the theme of this movie?
Well, I think that if you had to pick one... It's probably, now I'm thinking about it, it was the, like, should they live or not? Like, it's the theme of, you know, the theme of should they live or not? Dinosaurs.
We made them, are they actually animals that deserve
Are they animals or are they property?
Or something, right?
Yeah. Mm. But then you didn't get that, because then you suddenly are selling them. You're like, the question isn't kill them or save them. Or, like, leave them to die or save them. The question then is, sell them or don't, like, midway through. And that's where it gets weird.
Yeah,
the only time it gets weird.
I would say that the theme of this movie is that humans are greedy and that their reach exceeds their grasp, so they think they have control over a situation they can profit from, but they can't. And I would say that's unique to this movie in the Jurassic Park franchise, and that no other movie has ever said that in this series up to this point. So it's good that they really focused on that. That would be my assessment, my key takeaway. My sarcasm was did I sell it too well?
No, Skype's being weird. If you can hear me, my Skype is being weird. I'm sorry.
Mm. No, I can hear you. It's just okay. At this point, like, my anger has turned to exhaustion with this movie, because it's just like I've got nothing else for it.
Yeah, you know, but much like these dinosaurs, hydrogen cyanide is slowly killing us.
I'm just looking at all the IMDb.
They were releasing it. Like, you were just kind of watching it, hoping that it would make its way into the theater, into your theater, while you were watching it. Like, can I get some of that, please?
The hydrogen cyanide, or a dinosaur, or something that will just come, end my
anything.
Misery.
Yeah. If anything in this movie wants to pop out of the screen and live with, you know, with me, go for it. I'm ready.
Come on, T-Rex. But speaking of the hydrogen cyanide creating the choice to release them. Weird lab, by the way, but weird brick lab. But they sort of set up this thing where the B story of what's her face and what's his name are supposed to be solving this HVAC system for the hours worth of screen time that our characters are running around.
We couldn't do anything. Sorry.
Yeah, they just show up and go, oh. So you guys come down there, and then it's like, oh, we can release them, but we dare not push the big button, and then it's I dare to push the big button, and so they're all released. I don't even know why Claire pushed the button to release the T-Rex into the waiting room with the rest of them. Like, why would she even contemplate that?
She does not understand dinosaurs at all, and you would think she would have at that point.
She literally rode that dinosaur. not well rode is a strong she mounted that dinosaur to draw blood from it in a nonsensical scene.
Rode was weirdly better.
Yeah
but she did
the reverse T-Rex. She hopped on top of this dinosaur to pull blood out of it so that they could go back to Blue and give a transfusion to Blue so that they could take a bullet out of Blue.
How does that scene back make it through script revision? How does somebody go, we're going to take blood out of a partially unconscious T-Rex and put it in a raptor that got shot in the belly?
I thought that was the only, like, that was the only part of the movie to me that felt like a movie. To be quite honest, like the rest of it felt like fan fiction pretend. That was the only scene where it was like, oh, this is a clever little gimmick. They got to pull blood out of the T-Rex and they're stuck in a truck. It's a contained situation. It's a sleeping beast. You're trying not to wake it up. Like, yeah, this makes sense. Okay. It was the only scene in the movie that felt like it was, that felt like it was paced and prepped and like written with any kind of like intended tension. The rest of it was just like a thing, run. Oh no, that's all.
Yeah, with this, I would push back a little in that the dialogue that they have is supposed to be like fun and light and quippy about the scenario that they're in.
Oh, it doesn't work. I'll say that it doesn't work. But the intention was there in the way that it was not the rest of the movie.
Right, and I think part of the reason it was why it was effective is that they realized that they could have a T-Rex puppet inside of a confined space, mostly covered with a tarp. And
practical effects, Joe. Practical effects.
Yeah. Well, apparently they 3D printed, based on ILM's model of the T-Rex, the entire surface of that puppet.
Really?
Yeah, Neil Scanlon's team. And they kept asking for more polys because they were seeing facets in their prints. I don't know why they couldn't just, like...
That is fascinating.
Yeah,
well, sand it down with some sandpaper or something.
But yeah, I don't know why they couldn't sand it down. But anyway, they were like, "Oh, we're so proud of how the animatronics in this movie are the closest to the CG because we literally 3D printed the CG." And I'm like, "I don't know. I'm not really like in love with the CG dinosaurs in this movie, or the previous one." So
it's interesting that we used to scan practical puppets and turn them into CG models, and now they're taking CG models and turning them into puppets.
Yeah, what's the deal?
It's interesting
on the
how
driveway and you drive on the parkway.
Okay.
I feel like there was one more thing about this movie. Oh, what was the actor's name? You said it before, Joe.
Ted Levine.
Yes, did not like him in this, and not in the way you're not supposed to. Just eye-rolly, like. Like he was told to play a bad guy, so he bad guyed it up, and it was not fun to watch.
No, and he had a very affected performance with the teeth thing and everything, and I never bought that he was legitimate in any way at all. Because if anything has taught us, if the Jurassic Park franchise has taught us anything, it's like you cannot trust a mercenary who just shows up on an island to hunt dinosaurs. That's just not how that works. But I didn't buy his thing, and I didn't buy the shtick with the collecting the teeth thing. And they tried to set it up with exactly one scene of him taking a tooth from one of the captured dinosaurs, and they so that they could get the ridiculous scene of him trapping himself inside of a cage with an Indoraptor.
That was just bonkers. Like that did not, he's like, it's just a senile old man wandering into a room like where people have been running out of going like, where's my bonus? And then like, oh, a giant cage with a giant dinosaur in it. I'm gonna get into it. Like, what? Why?
Because they wanted to have somebody release the Indoraptor, and they wanted to kill a person, and so they wrote that scene.
Oh, and doesn't the Indoraptor like wink at us at a certain point in that scene? He's like trying
smiles.
To pull the tooth out. He's like, it does. It smiles with the. Don't give me.
At least he wasn't like collecting skin from the dinosaurs to make a skin suit out of in this movie.
Reference acknowledged.
Yeah.
I just realized that's who that was. Mm-hmm. I did not at all connect that.
Mm. Yeah.
Doesn't save it.
He's not in a lot of stuff. Ted Levine. Because I was like, he seems familiar, but not in a positive way. I need to figure out where I've seen him before.
I feel like he might have taken people's skin at one point.
Well, he was also in Wild Wild West. He was General McGrath.
Yeah.
Bloodbath
McGrath.
Ted Levine.
At least he's in a position where he can only pick projects that he really cares about.
Sure. He feels passionately about this creepy guy who pulls teeth out of dinosaurs. I have 2 points and they're going to go out of my head if I don't say them quickly. So there were a couple instances in this movie where everyone was sprinting and all I could do was picture these people sprinting against green screens. Like I was so out of the action that I was like, oh, look, they're just running and reacting to nothing. And they know they're reacting to nothing. And this is all CG here. And it's really taking me out of it. And then the other one was the Indoraptor there. The teeth are on the outside of the mouth, and it makes me very angry because that doesn't work.
It's like a Mako shark. But
terrible. Also, if we're just listing random things firing off the truck, able to like ramp off of the dock. I forgive that stuff in movies usually, but this one really bugged me.
Yeah.
They did a move where there was a ramp that you didn't see.
Yes, I forgive it in speed, but in this, it's like, how? What did that happen? And then the sad Brachiosaurus shows up on the dock, is like, Mama! And then the smoke fills the air and it becomes an amber Brachiosaurus and for no reason stands up on its hind legs.
Yeah. Well, they were trying to murder the original dinosaur image from the first movie. They had 2 call-outs to it in here where they're approaching the Margaritaville downtown area and the Brachiosaurus comes across and even, you know, hops up in the air and does the thing and they're just like, oh, wow, dinosaurs. And it's like, yes, movie. Oh, wow, dinosaurs. I've seen this shot before in another movie. But I know that the point of your movie isn't, oh, wow, dinosaurs, because we're going through a literal ruin right now. So,
I can't stand that anymore in these movies when they try to wow you dinosaurs. Like, we've seen them. You're just waiting on it to be over at this point.
No, I mean, it's just that I knew that the point of that scene wasn't, oh, wow, dinosaurs. I knew the point of that scene was the cynical, we have destroyed everything. Here's the rubble, the last of the rubble, is this homage to another movie. It wasn't like a unique thing about that particular dinosaur. It's just that's all this dinosaur does is show up on a scene and go and then hop up in the air. And it does that on the docks where it does the same thing. And if you're listening to the musical cue, it's trying to be like sad, you know, version of the first time you see the Brachiosaurus. It's like, oh, this is the last time you see the Brachiosaurus. This is the last of the island.
And it was sad, like the killing the dinosaurs and the making them like cry out and like showing the torture of them. It was super unnecessary and like totally overdone, like everything in the movie, I guess. But it's just like, I hate those moments where it's so overtly manipulative, trying to make you sad that it's just like, oh, come on, man, don't do that.
Oh, yeah. For me, that's anytime you like you put a bomb in a mailbox and then have, oh, no, a mom is going to open the mailbox. Oh, the mom is holding a kid. Like,
that's what this was.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's off screen and you just hear an explosion, you're just like, and then like cries or something. It's like, oh my God, why are you doing this?
Yeah, it's like, come on. Yeah, work for it. Don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I got to say, to go back to your other point about the truck thing where it's like on a ramp and gets onto the other, the boat ramp, she shifts gears to try to get better traction to go up the ramp. I'm not an auto mechanic or engineer by any stretch of the imagination, but when you shift gears, don't you go back to neutral? Wouldn't you lose any of your traction and forward momentum?
No. Joe, when you move that around, you suddenly get new powers, new car powers. All you have to do is move it around as much as, like, just at key moments, and your car will, just like a mother's love, will just be repossessed with strength and able to lift itself to do anything you want. Anything.
It'll have the strength of 10 trucks and be able to lift 10
trucks. It can lift beams. It can fly into space.
It can
anything
save its
you
child
need.
Truck from underneath a girder that had fallen.
It can travel through time. It can do anything when you move that thing around. Also, when it lands on the truck, no one sees that. Like, no one's like, oh, hey, Ted made it. Like, oh, did I'm glad we reserved this space, this one parking space for the flying truck. And then, but then they have to, they don't have to hide when they get off the truck at first, but then they have to hide the rest of the scene.
Well, she puts a hat on, so she doesn't look like, you know, it's Bryce Dallas.
That was her? I thought that was a guy. I'm just kidding, I know.
What I don't buy about that is they're all hanging out in the I don't know, the loading bay of this ship and looking out the back of it to see the destruction of the island. So they've all seen this truck leap on in the last moments, and no one goes to it to be like, oh, are you all right? Even? Like,
no,
even
like,
if you...
High five, that was dope, dude. Like, Fast and Furious.
Yeah, that was kind of awesome. You jumped off the exploding island, and I don't know who you are.
Yeah, so the movie just has you believe that. But and then for some reason... The random patrols that come through every, like, 48 hours on this boat only ever close the door that one time. Nobody goes in to check on Blue, which is apparently...
Well, yeah, then they ask you... No, then they're like... Then they, if they see you, they're like, oh, do you work here? Clearly. So, come on, here's some orders.
Hello, obvious IT guy. Here's a bunch of rope. You are obviously part of our crew, even though I've never seen you before, and you look like you came from we need an IT guy casting meeting. But yeah, here, come with me. I did laugh a little bit when he shows up later with the doctor stuff on, just because it was so ludicrous at that point. It was like, he would have totally been able to escape by this point. How did he go from being a smuggler boat merchant marine guy to being a lab technician? Like, I don't understand what that pivot was, but
he was undercover. No, he's another one of those characters that in real life, if he would have gotten back to the mainland, he would have just like dropped whatever prop he was holding and he would have sprinted for his life.
Joe, you're so right. He was not being recruited into science on that boat. Like, he was totally being recruited as a... I did not make that connection at all. That is, I am with you on the laughter. That's absolutely, like, ludicrous. That he... I'm sorry. I'm just really enjoying this in my head now. The fact that he is, like, the next time you see him, he's, like, a clown. Or he's, like... Then he's, like... He's just in every crew at every kind of possible, just vocationally shifting each time.
Yeah, at post-credits, Blue scampers down that hill into the suburbs and into a Safeway, and he's just there, like, restocking milk, looking out of the side of his eye at Blue or something.
Really scared, yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know how he's still in doctor's stuff. So now you guys see how the sequel to this needs to just be La La Land with the raptor, and if it's anything else, then it's a disappointment, yeah.
Yeah, so he ended up in the suburbs there, so I'm inclined to think Blue's gonna, you know, settle down and have a family and, like, teach his kid to play t-ball or something. I don't know.
I think he's just gonna eat a bunch of dogs that people are walking.
Probably.
Maybe the
people
walking
the dogs. He's only gonna eat animals and unlikable people.
Yes. Because, I mean, they don't have, for whatever reason, they're totally fine killing a lot of people in these movies, but they are, for whatever reason, very hesitant to show the carnivores killing anyone who might be, like, nice or good, or, like, at the very least, not evil, you know, lawful, neutral, or whatever. Like, none of those people meet an untimely end in the Jurassic World stuff.
I may have talked about this before on this podcast, but I had a hard time, and I still am, because I'm still in a second draft, but, like, I'm writing a thing and it has monsters in it, and it's I found that it was very hard for me to kill people in my script. Like, I wanted to do a monster movie where people get eaten, and when it was timed, or, like, eaten and attacked, and that's my favorite genre of movie, is people go to exotic locations and start getting killed by creatures or animals. And it's really hard because in real life, most of us don't like killing people. Most of us don't like seeing people get killed, even the people we don't like. And so, like, what's interesting is, like, you know, you have a movie like Gremlins, which I am not a fan of, outspokenly, and it spends so much time trying to set up these quirky, unlikable characters just so that bad things can happen to them at the end. And it's like the horror movie trope, too, is like you just make all your characters unlikable, so then you're more okay with watching them all get cut up and killed. But like Jurassic Park, Dennis Nedry is the only character who you don't like, and you like that you don't like him. But you see him get killed, and Gennaro, the lawyer. But Muldoon, you trusted that guy, so that's why he gets killed.
And Sam Jackson.
And Sam Jackson, you trust him and he gets killed. But it doesn't ruin the fun. That's the thing, is like trying to make a really fun, scary movie without ruining the fun is really hard. And I think that I honestly have not been able to figure out. It's some kind of intangible thing that only good writers and good directors like know. Knowing they're got how to do, and I don't mean to directly target, because when I'm shitting all over this movie, by the way, I know that it is not, probably not due to one or two specific people. It is a committee of people that are what's the word for when people are guilty but complicit? Complicit is the word. Okay, will you just let me have my word? Because I think it applies in this situation.
I demur to the writer. Go ahead.
The point is, I'm rambling on and on about how it's hard killing people, and I think that the creators of these current Jurassic movies haven't figured that out yet either.
Yeah,
and that's disappointing.
Well, it's like, I don't want to see wholesale slaughter in these movies, but at the same time, if you are going to kill people and it's always only ever going to be to dispatch justice on behalf of the audience for people we don't like meeting an untimely end, then, like, what are you doing killing them? Like, you might as well not kill that person. They might as well go to jail or something. Like, we don't need to see a T-Rex eat Mills at the end. He could very well be carted off and be in a Senate committee or whatever, you know, in cuffs or whatever, being interviewed about things. Like, we don't need to see all of these bad guys literally be eaten on screen by a dinosaur to be like, yeah, he got what was coming to him. And then all of those dinosaurs don't kill any of the main cast, and also sometimes simultaneously kill or wound or injure another creature which might have killed the main cast, so as to make sure the main cast was still alive, as the T-Rex often serves another function of doing. It is unfortunate that
I really
kind of there.
It is unfortunate. I would love to see the next Jurassic movie just like take these bold turns and be like shockingly good. Like the way that people are talking about this, the new Mission Impossible, apparently it is like a gift to action cinema. Like I would love to see, like, I would love for the next Jurassic movie people to be like, what, like, hey, have you seen Jurassic World Wholesale Slaughter? No, I have not. And they can be like, well, oh my gosh, it is intense, and there is a thing that happens that you would not see coming. I'm basically being my brother. There is a thing that happens that you would not... You don't know that, brother, so that impression is meaningless to you. The point is, I would love to see them just kill somebody. Like, like Muldoon and Sam Jackson. The way they get off in the first one, and there are two characters that are making you feel safe. Like, I'd love to see them do that in the next one. I would love to see them kill all the new characters in this last one, maybe even the ones from Jurassic World.
Whoa.
Maybe everybody.
Slow down there, David Fincher. we know, would this be like Aliens 3, where all of a sudden they all died on that last car trip we saw them on along the PCH?
Yeah, that wasn't great. Oh, yeah, the next one starts with the car pulls it like into a garage and they're all dead. It somehow drove itself like home.
Autopilot. Yeah, I could totally, I could
There were compies in the back seat that ate all the main cast.
No, the girl did it. The girl's DNA was awoken, and she did it. And now she's loose.
No, she's just going to be upset because she's a clone, and she never asked to be created, and she's going to take her revenge against mankind.
Whatever, like, whatever gets us there.
There's nothing to stop the series of movies from turning into the Marvel movies. Like, we've opened the door to the Hulk. Like, you know, who knows if this girl gets angry and turns green? Like, there's no saying. Like, we're talking about modifying genes and making people and stuff. So why not?
I honestly would be really excited if I found out that, like, she did, like, turn into a velociraptor every full moon. And, like, that would be genuinely exciting. Like, okay, that's new and weird. Let's go for it. You can't get worse.
Yeah. Or you know, we could just do something fun. We'll be fine.
I don't know. Can you do something fun after this? I feel like they took all of the fun out of this universe.
Yeah, this was trying to do something just fun. That's why nobody died. That was important. And that's why... Yeah.
Well, it's weird because they weren't trying to do something fun because they were trying to go for gothic horror. The whole latter part of this film is, you know, a like gothic mansion chase with a Mary Shelley monster of science chasing them. That doesn't seem in character with anything, and it's not fun. You don't really like get enjoyment out of that. It's just like a room chase and rooftop chase, rain slicked rooftop chase. Not that I am implying that in any way characters duking it out on a rain slicked rooftop at a mansion is something that I may have seen before in other films or other things where it's just sort of a romantic way to end it. Whatever. What if they did like Death Becomes Her and like, if instead of being impaled on the Triceratops skeleton, they got into a big pool.
Did they imply that the Indoraptor was bulletproof because Chris Pratt shot it 3 times and the bullets like just kind of made a sound like they bounced off?
No, they said it was armored, but he did shoot it. It just didn't seem to slow it down enough. Also, he somehow managed to pick up a gun that had 3 rounds in it.
It made the plinking sound. It went like the plink, plink, like it fell out of like the bullets fell out of him. I'm with you, Dan. That it rejected the bullets and substituted itself.
Well, one thing that bothers me about the Indoraptor is that it's supposed to be like Indominus Rex Raptor, and BD Wong has this line where he says the fusion of two of the world's greatest things to ever walk the planet. But the Indominus Rex already had raptor DNA in it, which was a plot point in the previous film.
Yeah.
So
yes,
it's not a fusion of the Indominus Rex with a raptor. It's just more raptor inside the Indominus Rex.
It's just marketing, Joe. It's just a marketing tagline that they're going to stick with.
Angry. So, I think we've talked about this pile of poop long enough.
And yet, I feel like we could go on for 8 more hours, but yeah, we probably...
It's so dense with wrongness. I can't...
we didn't even talk about the murder. This movie has murder in it.
James Cromwell's murder is so dumb. It's like...
It's so dumb.
In this room with no means to protect myself or defend myself, and I have not informed anybody of your evilness, but I want you to call the police because it would be better coming from you. By the way, my phone is conveniently placed on top of a pillow.
Saw it coming, emotionally manipulative, don't need that scene, all just stupid.
But did you not like the crashing of the mosquito cane?
Oh my god,
no,
that's the
what
moment.
A poorly made mosquito cane.
See, when the amber breaks in the mosquito cane, that's how you know we're in the alternate universe now, where the girl is the dead girl and everything that happens after that never really happened in the first place.
Oh yeah, because like the sequel will show that with like a reverse, like it'll reverse that shot in slow motion, like, and it'll go like black and white, and we'll see the alternate. Okay,
yeah, it'll do like a Doctor Strange where the cane falls through the floor and turns into like a ghost cane, and then falls the other direction and gets caught by the other James Cromwell in the alternate universe.
No, it gets caught by John Hammond, and then another John Hammond. Hello, John. And they just duplicate. See, and that's the whole movie. It's just David Lynch's Jurassic World wholesale slaughter, and it's just like the whole. It's just 2.5 hours of John Hammond cloning himself, saying hello, John.
You know what it is? They had to create supercomputers of their own to be able to contain the massive gene sequencing code. So they've got worlds in which there is an entire digital version of John Hammond's DNA saved in the supercomputer as well.
So angry with you. I was literally going to say they haven't explored what they could do with immortality in this series. That could have been with the girl, but it wasn't. That could have been his
Westworld.
Obsession.
Anyway, moving on. Yeah, I Westworld. I was about to say, have you all been watching? Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say it seriously, but then Dan's all like, I'm going to say it as a joke because Westworld. Dan.
It is a joke. We don't need John Hammond in a computer.
Well, I wasn't saying John Hammond in a computer. I was saying it could have been about longevity or something, but right now it just seems like he only cloned this one person just because they had some sort of sentimental significance to him.
Also,
and he
when
didn't
did he clone
make
that
her
person?
A dinosaur.
The girl was what, like 15 years old in the original park was how long ago? And it was before that because he was out of the series because he split with John Hammond before Jurassic Park opened.
Well,
so
it didn't mean that they could have split because he was trying to do this, not because he had successfully done it yet.
Or how many different 10-year-olds did he make that like didn't make it past age 12 or something?
Damn it, man. I'm a paleo veteran. I'm not a mathematician.
He has a whole room like Aliens 4 style. Full of the previous incarnations.
He's got a room full of the girl. He's got a room full of Bernards. He's got all kinds of stuff down there.
A room full of Bernards.
Yeah.
This has gone off the rails. So
way off. That perfectly embodies this franchise.
Yeah, we've gone off the gyro ball. We're done. Gyro ball's gone off the cliff.
We've gone off the gyro ball where we're done. And that's the ball game. Oh, man. Check one, check two. Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. The dinosaurs are all gone except some of them. Island blown up by a volcano. I ran out of syllables, I'm talent deficient when it comes to music. I'm sorry. Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. There we are.